It has been nearly 50 years of brutal but often stable memories for the people of Syria, ruled over by one family for all of that time, the Assad family. Ba'athist President Hafez al-Assad and his son now Bashar al-Assad, Syria's current president. Hafez seized power in Syria in 1970, ruled that country with a tight fist, one-party, one-man rule. He moved quickly to crush political opposition, and in 1982, he carried out the brutal Hama massacre.
The resolution to this crisis cannot be about one man's insistence or one family's insistence about clinging to power. This needs to be about empowering all of the Syrian people.
That's Secretary of State John Kerry speaking in Switzerland, the site of the Geneva II talks on the latest crisis, resolving the war in Syria. Bente Scheller is director of the Heinrich Boll Foundation's Middle East office and author of The Wisdom of Syria's Waiting Game, Foreign Policy Under the Assads. She says that Bashar Assad's ability to evoke memories of brutality and extreme violence among Syrians makes it hard for the people to feel any kind of empowerment.
The thing is that there was always a kind of contract between the Syrian government and its people. And this contract included that most of the Syrians would just not step over any red line. They would not become politically active. They would not indulge in oppositional activities. And most of the Syrians, therefore, were guaranteed safety, security in their own country, and that they could make a basic living. And over the revolution, we've seen very quickly that Bashar al-Assad has dismantled this contract. There is no safety any longer, not even in the regime-held territories. People are safe any longer, and the economic situation for many Syrians has become extremely difficult. And therefore, I think now we see a greater opposition to the Syrian regime than we ever saw before.
But that said, when Bashar al-Assad speaks to the world, he often seems like someone completely out of touch. But when he speaks to his own people, it seems like they're getting a much different, more sobering message of the potential for brutality.
Oh, definitely. And there is such a big difference between what he tells people, both his own people as well as the world, and what they see in daily life. I mean, by now it has reached a level where pretty much everybody knows somebody who has disappeared or who has been killed. And still the government hasn't sent any message to the people that it will protect them in any instance, create safe zones, or provide them with essential needs. So therefore, for many Syrians, this gap between what they hear and what they see on official television and what is happening to them in their daily life is really, really huge.
The people of Syria, do they respond to evidence of torture and mass graves and the kind of video evidence that has come out from this defector by saying, oh, wow, this is a revelation to us? Or do they already suspect and really understand that this is going on?
I mean, for some people, of course, it is the same as on the international level. They claim it is not true, it is not happening, these images are forged. But there are really a lot of people who know of somebody personally who has been killed in this way. I mean, also, well, we are working here with a lot of Syrians, and among them we also had several cases where people just disappeared in prison, and we learned a few days later that they had been killed. So I think for many Syrians it's rather astonishing that now the world seems to react so strongly to these photos, because there was a lot of documentation of these crimes going on before and also very reliable sources. So I think for those who were aware of what was happening, it is a bit of a surprise that the international community only now seems to notice at what scale the killing in Syria is going on.
Can you remind us what Bashar al-Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad, did in the city of Hama in the 1980s, and how really that, for many in this generation, is the, you know, first memory that they have of what their government and this family is capable of?
Yeah, I mean, faced with a revolution back then, which was mostly Islamist-led, Hafez al-Assad chose just to send his tanks to the city of Hama and just erase the center of the city, basically. And people were arrested there in scores, people were killed. It's until now not really known how many people were killed in the act. It's estimations between 10,000 and 20,000. And back then already many people disappeared in prisons, and their whereabouts are unknown until today. So this is really something deeply set in the memory of many Syrians. But this is also one of the reasons why now Syrians are disappointed with the international reaction to what is going on now, because they said back then the world did not really know what was going on, but now we're transmitting images through YouTube and other channels, and still there is no reaction, even though it's well documented and it's not a secret. So therefore, this memory mixes with the actual experience of Syrians today, and it leads to a lot of disappointment with the international community.
Based on your understanding of Hafez al-Assad, what do you think Bashar al-Assad's notion is of his responsibility here as a member of this family? Why is he strengthened by everything that's happened here?
Because he takes part of the strategy that his father used. His father was just crushing dissent violently inside and trying to keep relations up with the world by just waiting. I mean, there were protests against some of his policies, but he always just waited until the storm weathered. And Bashar is trying to do the same. He's heavily clamping down on what's going on inside, and he's at the same time not giving in to any demands of the international level. So he's really trying to follow what his father did. It's just that his father never was faced with an internal and external crisis at the same time. So the situation is slightly different for him.
Bente Scheller is the author of The Wisdom of Syria's Waiting Game, Foreign Policy Under the Assads, and director of the Middle East Office at the Heinrich Boll Foundation in Beirut. Bente, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
One of the complications in the Geneva II talks is the fact that the opposition is divided over a mission to restore Syrian democracy, that's what the Free Syrian Army wants, versus a mission to establish an Islamic State from Lebanon to Iraq, which is what Al-Qaeda wants, with the creation of the Islamic State in Syria. Contributor to PRI's The World, Maureen Alavezi, has been reporting from the region, and she says the Syrian opposition right now is facing a two-front war, one against Assad and the other amongst its own factions.
Well, what we've seen since early January is the start of the infighting between rebel groups. So on one end, you have the Free Syrian Army and other Islamic groups against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, which is affiliated to Al-Qaeda. And what's interesting is that ISIS has been very powerful for the past 5-6 months in northern Syria. And there's been some anger boiling over the past few months because they've led a campaign of executions, abductions against civilians, activists, journalists, against also rebel leaders of the Free Syrian Army themselves. And for civilians, it's been a very confusing situation. One man that I met at the border put it that way. Before, things were very simple. You had the regime bombing us and the Free Syrian Army trying to gain more ground. But now, with the recent infighting, you don't know who's who, who's where, and you certainly don't know who's winning.
Well, you know, for many people in Syria, for civilians, certainly for people who want to join the opposition in any way, they face a choice. Who do they go in with? And it's a life or death choice. Tell me about Abu Hussein, who really has viewed this entire process through the eyes of someone who used to work as a recruiter.
Well, yeah, Abu Hussein, he used to live in Ukraine, and he came back to Syria at the beginning of the revolution. And he was approached for a special mission, which was to facilitate the coming of the foreign jihadists who were landing in Istanbul and to bring them down to the Turkish-Syrian border. So he helped dozens of foreign jihadists come over to Syria. But then last spring, you had another al-Qaeda group that emerged, and that's the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And most of the foreign fighters left Jabhat al-Nusra, went to the Islamic State, and that's when Abu Hussein realized that he had really facilitated the coming of jihadists that were now turning into a problem.
Maureen, before we go, do you think people on the ground in Syria have a sense that these divisions and this stalemate between ISIS and the Free Syrian Army only strengthens the hand of Bashar al-Assad at the talks in Geneva?
The thing that comes back, really, talking to whether people from the FSA or regular civilians, is that everybody has the feeling that the regime has played on the terrorist threat. It's really since the beginning of the revolution, Bashar al-Assad says that all the rebels are terrorists. But now you have actual terrorists. The FSA fighters, the civilians have talked to, they consider the Islamic State to be terrorists. And for them, this is something that was not existing, that was not there at the beginning of the revolution. And then these people have arrived and they've completely hijacked the revolution, but they've also made the case of Assad that the uprising at the end of the day is about terrorism. And so they're very angered about that. They're not putting a lot of hope or a lot of faith in the Geneva talk, to be fair. Like, a lot of them have long lost the hope that the international community was willing or able to solve this crisis. But what's interesting as well is that the Free Syrian Army, the priorities have completely changed. They have to tackle first the problem of the Islamic State, because as long as they will be there, they won't really be able to focus on taking down the regime.
Fighting amongst themselves and really a distraction from the main event, which, if not the talks in Geneva, certainly the question of what will happen to Bashar al-Assad. The opposition maybe not in a position to determine that, a position that could even be weakening. Maureen Olivezzi, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Maureen Olivezzi is a freelance reporter and contributor to PRI's The World.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.